Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Well, today we're going to review a few of the programs you can hear on the new schedule for the Radio Theater Channel. On this particular podcast, we're going to have an episode of Theater 5, The Little Things in Life, and Vic and Sade. Theater 5 was ABC Radio's attempt to continue to do drama radio into the 60s. It had a kind of a short run. It was called Theater 5 because it was on the affiliate stations at 5 p.m. And they tried for a while to rev up radio to keep it going, but it was not to be. So that's the story of Theater 5. Now, Little Things in Life was an attempt to renew radio drama in the Renaissance period of the 1970s, right about the middle of about 75, 76. Little Things in Life was a soap opera, and it was carried on a network called the Soap Network, which is interesting. Didn't hear much about that before, just found that out by listening to Little Things in Life. Vic and Sade, of course, is a kind of a offbeat comedy that a lot of people enjoy. For those of you who are listening to the podcast and have not heard the Radio Theater Channel, you can listen to it at TuneIn. So go to TuneIn.com, then click Search, then click Radio Theater Channel, and then, of course, click the Listen button. You can also hear it on Streama. Go to Streama.com and search for All Time Oldies Radio Theater Channel. And enjoy the new schedule. Here we go. Theater 5, Little Things in Life, and Vic and Sade.
Theater 5 presents Panic.
Mad? Oh, Cora, you think you're insane just because you thought you parked your car on one side of the street and found you'd parked it on the other?
But I was so terribly sure.
A lapse of memory happens to everybody. But why go to pieces over something like that? Look, Cora, it's late. How about giving your future husband a nightcap and then I'll be on my way.
All right, darling. You want whiskey or brandy or... Oh, no!
What is it?
No!
What is it? Why are you staring at that picture?
There were three children playing.
What?
In the picture, there were three children playing.
Cora, you can see for yourself there were only two.
But there were three. I know there were. When I bought that painting a few days ago, I remember thinking how nicely balanced the scene was because of the third figure. Didn't you notice it when I showed it to you?
I'm afraid I didn't pay much attention, but I'm not much of an art lover.
There were three, Bill. There were three.
Easy now. Now, this is silly. I know how we can settle this. Steve has seen the painting, hasn't he?
Well, I...
Let me just call him and then...
No, he's playing cards at his club. He won't be home until 1 or 2 in the morning. Anyhow, I don't care what Steve says or what you say. There were
all
three.
All right, all right. There were three. There were 30.
No...
Oh, it doesn't matter, Cora. All that matters to me, sweetheart, is you, and you can't let yourself go to pieces like this.
Oh, Bill. Bill?
Look, you're just emotionally upset. It's nothing serious.
My mother...
That has nothing to do with you. Oh, sure, you're emotionally high-strung the way your mother was, but, Cora, believe me, there's nothing wrong with you.
Then how? How do you account for...
Nerves. What else? Just nerves. After what you've been through this past month, you're exhausted physically, emotionally, every way. Look, what you need right now is a good night's sleep.
I couldn't sleep.
You must. Now go on, take a sedative and tuck yourself in for the night, huh? Things will look a lot different in the morning.
Oh, Bill, what would I do without you? You're always so calm and steady. Like a rock I can cling to.
Well, what's a husband for? Well, fiancé, anyhow.
Husband?
We are going to be married, I trust.
You haven't changed your mind? You still love me and want to marry me in spite of...
Oh, you are tired, Cora. Look, I'll never love anyone else, and you know it. Now off with you. I'll let myself out.
All right. Good night, darling.
Why, Bill.
Hello, Steve.
What are you doing here at this hour?
Not so loud. I sent Cora off to bed. But I stayed to talk with you.
Oh, well, look, if it's anything to do with Father's will, couldn't it wait till tomorrow? I mean, it's 2 a.m.
It's Cora I want to talk about, Steve. I'm worried about her.
Why?
Steve, that picture on the wall, did Cora show it to you when she brought it home the other day?
Why, yes, yes.
How many kids were in that picture, playing?
2, of course.
Cora swears there were 3.
Well, she's mistaken.
Steve, this is more than just a casual mistake. This and a lot of other things that have been happening. That's why I'm worried.
Well, you don't have to be. I know what makes my sister tick, and I can assure you she's going to be all right.
Going to be?
She's had a rough time emotionally since Dad's death. She isn't exactly herself, but it's nothing serious.
I think it is. Or maybe if something isn't done, Cora ought to see a psychiatrist.
Look, you're attaching far too much importance.
I don't think so. Naturally, I haven't told Cora how I feel. I didn't want to worry her. Or if it comes to that, let her know how worried I am.
And you were the rock that I clung to.
Cora!
I put my trust in you, my faith in you, and all the time you were lying.
Cora, you're all wound up.
You kept assuring me that I'm all right, and all the time you think I'm heading for an asylum, that I need a psychiatrist.
Cora, I couldn't tell you that...
The truth! How you really feel about me. So you told me lies, is that what you're saying?
Cora, darling, you don't know what you're saying. I didn't lie to
get
you.
Get out.
Cora, hold on to
get
yourself.
Get out, and never come back.
Maybe you better go, Bill.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
You shouldn't have talked to Bill like that, Cora. He's got your best interests at heart. And the way you're acting these days, well, I understand, but he doesn't. I know this thing with you is temporary. Another thing he's got to think about is your lawyer. For your good is your inheritance. You're worth over $100,000, honey, and if Bill feels you're incapable... Cora, what are you going to do with that letter opener?
There were 3. I know there were 3.
Cora, no, the painting. Now, don't!
3! There were 3! 3! 3!
Nice to have you with us again, Mr. Chalmers.
Thanks, Gino.
You're expecting Miss Bannister?
No, her brother.
And speak of the devil.
Oh.
Hope I haven't kept you waiting, Bill. Gino?
Mr. Bannister? The usual.
Martini, Bill?
Well, all right, yes.
2 martinis.
Steve, about the other night.
Cora's miserable about what happened.
Yeah, so am I.
Well, then why don't you two just kiss and make up,
I love Cora, always will. That's why I'm so worried about her, Steve. Why, I feel very strongly that she ought to consult a psychiatrist.
Now, listen to me, Bill. This thing Cora's going through, nothing serious. My mother used to have the same attacks of, depression, loss of memory, fits temper. But what you've got to understand is that Cora's a lot more stable than Mother was.
She didn't act any too stable the other night.
Look, you knew my father.
Mm-hmm.
I think for 1 minute he'd have divided his estate evenly between Cora and me, given her a cool 1,000 to handle by herself, if he had thought she wasn't stable.
As a lawyer and Cora's fiancé, Steve, I don't think she ought to be allowed to handle the money so long as...
Pardon, Mr. Chalmers. Telephone call for you. Let me just plug the phone in.
Who's calling me, do you know?
No, but it seems urgent. Here you are.
Thanks. Hello? Yes, Cora? But what? Cora, please, look. Pull yourself together.
Bill, what's going on?
Yes, of course. Yeah, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Come on, Steve.
Let me just find my key here, Bill.
Cora, are you all right?
Well, this is a pleasant surprise.
Surprise? Cora, what's happened here? What's wrong?
Wrong?
Well, you just telephoned me at Gino's, didn't you?
Steve, what's he talking about?
Well, you did phone him, didn't you? You must have. I was sitting right beside Bill when... Cora. Cora, do you mean you don't remember?
I didn't telephone Bill. I didn't telephone anyone.
Cora,
I tell you, I didn't. I have been sitting here reading ever since Steve left to have lunch with you.
But there was a phone call.
Well, it wasn't me. It wasn't!
Now, look, sis. We're going to try and keep calm and talk this thing over sensibly. Bill and I were sitting there in Gino's, and Bill was saying how worried he is over you being allowed to handle your inheritance in your present condition.
Oh, so that's it, Mr. Chalmers. That's why you're so anxious to make me think that I am mentally unstable.
What?
That's why you're telling me to see a psychiatrist. It's the money.
Cora, you don't mean that.
You want to establish the fact that I need psychiatric help.
Cora, in heaven's
name...
Don't
you see? Later, after we're married, he could have me declared incompetent. He's trying to establish the grounds for it
Cora,
now.
Cora, stop it. And what put such a thought in your
head? Well, it's in Father's will, isn't it? If anything should happen to me, my share goes to you unless I'm married, in case it goes to my husband.
And you think that I would...
Mr. Chalmers... I told you once to get out of here. Now I'm telling you again.
All right. Sure, Cora. Anything you say.
Cora, you had no right to do that. I was there, sitting beside Bill when your call came.
I didn't call.
Well, someone did.
Well, it wasn't me. Steve? Bill arranged it.
What?
Yes, that's it. He arranged for someone to
call. He'd never do a thing like that.
Yes.
Look, now just a minute. Gino knows you. He knows your voice. Call him. Ask him. Ask him if Bill received a call from you.
I'll just do that. Is Gino... Oh, Gino, this is Cora Bannister. Gino, Mr. Chalmers received a telephone call at your place a little while ago. Did you happen to recognize the voice of the person calling him? I see. But if it had been me, do you think you would have recognized my voice? Why couldn't it have been me? Thank you, Gino. Thank you very much.
It couldn't have been you?
Gino says the voice on the other end was a man's.
Oh, come in, Bill. Cora and I just finished dinner. She went out to mail a letter. Cup of coffee?
No, thanks, Steve. Hey, look, we could have met at my office.
I know. Well, maybe I'm a matchmaker at heart.
Huh?
I asked you to come because I want to see you and Cora get together again.
It won't work.
She's miserable without you, Bill. I can tell you that.
No more miserable than I am, but what's the sense in us meeting again? Feeling the way she does?
Well, she's had a week to calm down and get a grip on herself. She's a different person, Bill. And you'll see I was right when I said her condition was just temporary. Just one of those things.
Oh.
Hello, Cora.
No, I don't want to see you, Bill.
Cora, that isn't true. You love Bill. You told me so.
I didn't say that.
Look, sis, you sat right there at dinner tonight and told me that...
What? What did you say?
I said you sat right at that table tonight and told...
We... didn't have dinner here tonight. Did we?
Well, now what?
But we didn't. We dined at Gino's. I've just come from there.
Cora, you went out to mail some letters only 10 minutes ago. You finished dinner and...
No, not here. It wasn't here.
Sis, there's the table with the remains of dinner on it. And if we had dinner at Gino's, what am I doing here?
Because after dinner at Gino's... I went to the powder room, and when I came back, you'd gone.
Without you?
Why would I have left without you?
Well, I thought it was strange. I couldn't understand why you... But it's so clear in my mind being at Gino's and having dinner there and... No.
Cora.
Don't
push me away, darling. I love you. You know that.
I don't know.
I'm not going to let you send me away again, Cora. You must realize, after what's just happened, that you do need psychiatric help.
Oh, yes. Yes.
All right, then. I'll arrange for it tomorrow. I'll call and let you know what time I'm picking you up. And you'd better be wearing more than just one earring, especially if it's a pair that I gave you.
Earring?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Bill, I'm sorry. I must have lost one.
I'll buy you another pair as a wedding gift.
Oh, Mr. Chalmers, afraid we're closing.
I see. Well, in that case, Gino,
You okay? You look a little tired.
I am, very. That's why I dropped in, late as it is. I could use a drink.
Well, why didn't you say so? I don't mind taking care of my regulars. What would you like?
Something strong.
Brandy? A double brandy and soda. You sit at the bar?
Yeah, sure. Gino?
Hmm?
This box with all this junk in it, what is it?
Oh, lost and found department. Stuff the customers drop or forgettables.
Boy, quite a collection.
Mm-hmm. One night. Tonight's.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe how careless people can be until they lose something. Here's your drink.
Thanks.
You don't mind if I go on checking the day's receipts?
No, go right ahead. Funny, people being so careless. Some of this stuff in this box looks expensive. This earring, for instance.
What?
This earring must have cost a mint.
Yeah.
Any idea who dropped it?
No. One of tonight's customers, though.
Oh, speaking of customers, seen much of the Bannisters lately?
No, not in a week or so.
They weren't here tonight? For dinner?
Uh-uh.
Well, I'll head on home. What do I owe you, Gino?
Oh, forget it. On the house.
Oh, thanks. Night, Gino.
Good night, Mr. Chalmers. Andre.
Yes, Gino?
You close the place up tonight. I've got something to take care of. Fast. Did your sister lose an earring tonight?
Yes, she did.
Then we've got trouble. She lost it at my place.
So what?
It was in a box on the bar with some other lost stuff. I thought it was your sister's. It was found under your table after you left.
Yeah?
Chalmers came by later for a drink, and he noticed it. I'm sure he spotted it as your sister's.
Then he knows Cora and I did have dinner at your place tonight.
Why do you think I'm here? We've got to do something.
But what?
I don't know yet. All I know, I'm holding your IOUs for all of 38 grand. And my backers are getting a little nasty about it.
What an idiot I've been. If only I'd never stepped into that back room of yours.
No, you're not the only one that feels that way. They put the heat on me, too.
You should have cut me off.
That's water over the dam. Right now, we've got to do something. You've got to do something.
Now, wait. You're in this as deep as I am.
Oh, no. All I did was give you a plan. Show you how to get your hands on your sister's money.
Yeah, by making a nervous wreck of her. Pulling all that stuff on her, parking her car somewhere else, hiring a man to duplicate that painting with two kids instead of three, setting up the dinner tonight.
Now, get hold of yourself. You could have had her committed. We'd both be in the clear. Now, thanks to Chalmers, we're in a tight spot.
What am I going to do?
I can tell you what I'm going to do, brother mine.
How much have you heard, Miss Bannister?
Enough to call the police.
Well, don't!
I'm not afraid of you. Or that gun.
You know, I didn't know the way out of this mess a minute ago. But I know it now. Bannister?
What?
Open the window.
What for?
You'd...
Miss Bannister, I'm sorry. You're a nice girl.
No.
Your brother's okay, too, only... He never could walk away from a crap table. So now we're both in a spot.
Gino?
Now, there's only one good way to get rid of a spot, Miss Bannister. Rub it out. I told you, Bannister, open that window.
If you think I'm going to let you
do this... It's the only way. And it makes sense, too. You see, she's been acting strangely, on the verge of emotional collapse. So in a fit of depression, she jumps out the window.
No!
Oh, she'll never feel a thing.
No! Let her go! Steve, help me!
Let her alone, Gino. Take your hands off her.
I warned you, Bannister. Now you, come here. You.
Drop the mister. Drop it. Up against that wall. Now face it. Put your hands on it.
Cora. Cora, darling, are you all right?
Oh, Bill.
I found your earring at Gino's.
I know. I heard.
I began to put things together, so I went back to the restaurant. They told me Gino left in a hurry. I figured I knew why and where, so I called the cops.
Oh, Bill. I knew I couldn't live without you.
Without me, you wouldn't have lived very long, darling. But now, well, just don't try living without me from now on.
Theater 5 has presented Panic, written by George Lowther, directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, Augusta Dabney, Jim Dukas, Nat Polan, and Owen Jordan. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
It's not nice to eavesdrop, but it's fun. So let's check in on the comedy of errors at the Baxters. On the little things in life, brought to you by Four-Way Nasal Spray, gives you the fastest decongestant relief possible.
Uncle Thaddeus, can I ask you something?
Don't ask for money.
It's this cold, Unc.
Nephew, you need Four-Way Nasal Spray.
Will it help?
Use as directed, Four-Way provides the fastest decongestant relief possible for stuffy noses and sinuses.
Unc, that's a blast. Is it expensive?
Bah, Four-Way costs a darn sight less than the leading brand. You can't buy faster relief at any price.
I'm gonna get some Four-Way.
Maybe you've got a nose for business after all.
As anyone knows, hair is only as beautiful as the condition it's in. Natural Wear Miss Clairol shampoo formula conditions while it colors, makes your hair healthy looking and manageable while it adds natural glowing color that covers gray. And it's so easy to use. Just shampoo it in for fresh young color that stays color true week after week. For conditioning hair color, the best it can be, at any price, Natural Wear Miss Clairol, to know you're the best you can be.
Noon, I have a dental appointment, then do a bit of shopping. Will you be all right?
Oh, I'll be fine. Seems ridiculous not to go to the office just because of a broken toe.
Oh, doctor said it was a funny break and to stay off it, which gives you a good opportunity to do what you promised me. We do this weekend and did not do. That's right, the Christmas cards.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll put the stamps on the envelopes.
No, you won't. I haven't bought them yet. Anyhow, that's the easiest part. Now, it's writing notes to people that's the hardest. Now, think how surprised and terribly pleased your old pals will be this year, hearing from you.
Well, they'll certainly be surprised, that's for sure.
Well, write a few. And then if you get tired, the typewriter's right here. You can address a few cards.
You type the address? Oh, I should think Christmas cards are much more personal if you address them by hand.
Well, they may be more personal, but typing is easier to read for the post office, which is having enough trouble these days. Oh, and don't forget to put on the zip codes now. It's very
well,
important.
Some of these addresses here don't have zip codes. Lots of them don't.
Well, that's because our friends didn't put them on in their last letter. So, then you have to look it up in the zip code directory.
What directory?
This right here.
This monstrous book is the zip code directory?
Yeah, I sent away for it 2 years ago.
Well, there's 1,694 pages in this directory.
Never mind that. Now, sometimes it's a bit complicated. You want me to show you how to look up a zip code?
I do think that I'm quite intelligent enough to be able to look up a zip code.
Oh, well, you try while I get my grocery list and get ready to leave. There, Linda Watkins Hess, 510 South Burnside, Los Angeles. Now, see if you can find her zip code, huh?
I bet this directory weighs 8 pounds.
You start by looking up California.
Yeah, I know where Los Angeles is. Let's see now. California, A, B, C, Anaheim, Bakersfield. For the love of Mike, there's 15 pages on Los Angeles. And it's just street numbers, 72 West, 109 East.
No. Look up the street name, South Burnside. Wonder if I should clean my teeth again. I scrub my teeth better on the day I go to the dentist to get them cleaned than I do any other time.
There isn't any South Burnside.
Well,
there isn't. Here,
look. Look up Burnside.
What's the matter with the Postal Service, anyway? Letters have been delivered for years without all this nonsense.
Several million more people do. Did you find Burnside?
Burnside. South. And it gives 3 different zip codes.
No, dear, it doesn't. Look at the top of the page. Now, you see, Los Angeles always starts with 900.
Yeah.
Whatever the address is. So you look back down here, and what do you see?
I don't know. I just see a list of numbers.
Well, her number's 510, isn't it? So that means that 510 comes between 100 and 899. Therefore, her code is 90057. You understand? You understand?
Yeah, of course I understand.
All right, dear. Well, you just didn't look as though you did. You know?
Of course I understand. I just didn't realize the postal system is getting so complicated.
No, it is.
Hey, did you call the office?
Yes. They said you wouldn't be in. They said fine.
Fine?
Well, they understood, dear. Broken toe and all. They said not to worry. I guess they'll manage without you.
Well, that's the point. I guess one likes to think the office is going to fall apart if one is not there.
Well, I'll set the phone right near you, so if you want to call your office later on and see if it's falling apart, you can... Oh, that must be Evie. I'm giving her a ride into town. I mean... Hello. I'll be right... I'm sorry. Hello, Miss Perkins.
Oh, at least my secretary misses me.
No, he was just... Oh, he's fine. Yes. Yeah, everyone's asking about your broken toe.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yes, Miss Perkins. Well, I'm coming into town. Could I bring the report back?
What's the matter? Oh, my golly, the estimate I didn't finish.
No, well, I'll tell him to look for it then. All right, Miss Perkins.
Uh-huh.
Goodbye. Miss Perkins can't come out herself, so she's sending some girl from the typing pool or something now. You think I dare leave you alone with some strange girl coming out?
Oh, for Pete's sake, I got a broken toe.
Well, you don't have a broken arm. Now, if I'm leaving you alone with some bright young thing, you better have quite a few Christmas cards done when I get back, dear.
Your jealousy is very flattering.
Well.
Yes, I promise you I will work while you've gone.
Fine. Make sure it's on the Christmas card.
In my house, we've got a fully automatic kitchen. Me. And the worst job I've got to do is scrape and scrub that dirty oven.
Well, there's a different way to clean your oven that's less work. The overnight way, with Mr. Muscle.
Promises.
It's true. With Mr. Muscle, you just spray it on at night, and while you sleep, its self-scouring foam lifts up the grease and grime.
That's a good idea.
So next morning, you just wipe clean.
You know, I've got a feeling that Mr. Muscle's going to be a good man to wake up to.
Do you think all antiperspirants are basically the same? Well, Ban Roll-On antiperspirant may just change your mind. Take effectiveness, for instance. Tests have shown that Ban Roll-On antiperspirant will actually help stop wetness better than most leading sprays. Make your own test soon. Pick up a bottle of Ban Roll-On, and you may discover what we've shown in tests. Ban Roll-On antiperspirant, proof that not all antiperspirants are created equal.
in. Come on right in.
Mr. Baxter, I'm Pat Healy from the office.
Oh, yes, yes. Come in, come in, come in. I've been expecting you. Miss Perkins called. Will you excuse me for not getting up?
How's the broken toe, Mr. Baxter?
I think I'm going to live. Now, have a chair, Miss Healy.
It's Mrs. Healy.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Healy.
Well, actually, I'm divorced.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm not. He was a heel. I told him he was just like his name. Healy? Heel?
Oh, yeah. Well, you brought a report from the office?
Oh, yes, right here.
Oh, thank you.
My, you certainly have a lovely home.
Oh, thank you. If you'll excuse me while I glance over this...
Of course, of course. My goodness, doing your Christmas cards already? I haven't even thought of them.
Well, my wife and I decided for once we'd get them done early.
Aren't you wonderful to help your wife do the Christmas cards? Most husbands just leave the whole thing for their wives to do.
Well, as a matter of fact...
I think it's wonderful of you. I really do. Oh, I'm bothering you. Go ahead and read the report. Miss Perkins said to sign it, too, after you've made any corrections.
Yeah, I will. Could I offer you some tea? Or coffee? Hmm? I'm afraid it'll be easier if you fix it yourself. The kitchen's right out there.
No, I'm fine. But instead of just sitting here, couldn't I type up some of the envelopes for you? I mean, you've got your Christmas list right here, and the typewriter, and the envelopes.
Oh, no, you don't have to do that.
No, I'd like to. I would. I really would. Now, you go right ahead and work on your report. Just don't pay any attention to me.
Yes, really, you don't need to help me with
anything. Well, I want to. Any husband who is nice enough to help his wife with all the work of Christmas cards deserves some help himself. And I'm being paid by the hour anyway, so you do your office report and I'll just start on these envelopes. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Collins, 392 Broadview. My husband never helped me with anything. I'd bring a carload of groceries home, but do you think that lazy bum would even help me unload the car?
Mrs.
Nothing. Not once in our 3 years of married life did he even offer to wipe dishes. Not once.
Look, if this is...
Don't pay any attention to me. Mr. and Mrs. George Ellis, 295, never gave me a corsage at Easter. Ann Arbor, Michigan. And never once remembered my birthday.
Look, Mrs. Healy,
but you know something? I love him. I still love him. Oh, if just once he offered to help me, the way you help your wife. I think it's beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Look, Mrs. Healy, if nothing else, you're getting the Christmas cards all wet. And the envelopes.
I'm very sorry to go on like this.
No, that's all right. I understand.
No, you don't understand.
Okay, I don't. But just the same...
I'm very sorry. This was quite inexcusable. Please forgive me.
Now, look, I've signed the report, and I'll call Miss Perkins, and I think if you get this back to the office now...
No. There are two reports for you to work on. There's the other. And just don't pay any attention to me. I'm all right now. I really am. I really am.
Well, okay. I'm sorry about the...
No, I'm fine. You work on the report. I'll keep on with your Christmas envelopes. Mr. and Mrs. Carter Jones. And I'll look up your zip codes, too.
Well, I don't think we can mail these envelopes. They look as though we'd left them out in the rain.
She offered to iron them, but I didn't know where the iron was.
And look at the typing, the mistakes. Minneapolis, Missouri?
I told you she was terribly upset.
Des Moines, Idaho? She's got question marks instead of commas, and some of her zip codes run up to 10 letters.
She was upset, but she insisted on helping, and since she was crying silently, I suppose her eyes were blurred.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I've got this whole story straight.
Now, look, it was just out of the blue. She was so impressed to think I was helping you with the Christmas cards, and it seems her ex-husband never helped her with anything, and she still loves him, but he never wiped dishes or put groceries away or carried her suitcase, so in comparison, she thought I was wonderful.
Would you like my opinion?
Well, it's the truth.
Honestly, Minneapolis, Missouri. Des Moines, Idaho.
Why do all these nutty things ever happen to me?
The Little Things in Life with Peg Lynch and Bob Dryden was written by Peg Lynch, directed by Warren Somerville, produced by Dick Cox and Peg Lynch, and has been brought to you by Ban Roll-On, America's leading roll-on antiperspirant. I'm Charles Woods. This program comes to you from the Radio Playhouse.
Well, Tommy Atkins, this is Bob Hope speaking from the USA. I suppose a lot of times you've wondered what sort of place the USA really is. Maybe you were a kid at Eton with starched collar. Maybe you grew up near the coal mines in Wales. Or played in the streets waiting for Dad to come home from the factory in London. And maybe once in a while the whole family went to the movies and you saw the American cowboy shooting out the lights in a Wild West saloon and men and women in penthouses high above the streets of New York. You saw the Statue of Liberty, the rush of humanity in Manhattan. The loneliness of the prairies with wheat fields and cornfields stretching as far as the eye could see. The grandeur of the Rockies, the miles of white desert, and the endless gold of orange groves that roll onto the Golden Gate. But you still wondered about the people, and you ran to your history book to see if there you might come to know us more as you know the kid across the street. But your history book told you of Indians and pilgrims, the first Thanksgiving, and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And you looked at the maps, but the spots of blue color that marked the Great Lakes told you nothing of the men who bring the iron from Duluth and the black dots that mark Dallas and Kansas City. Told you nothing of the men who raise mutton and beef. And no word in the books told you that the blood of an English boy from Dover is the same kind of blood that flows through the heart of an American boy from Texas. Now, I guess it's hard to find things like that in books. But along comes the greatest struggle in history, and the writing in books gives way to a new story being written in blood on the battlefields of North Africa, in the sky over Germany, on the raging waters of the Atlantic and Mediterranean. It's the story of what Tommy Atkins and Johnny American are fighting for. One's fighting for the sidewalks in New York, and the other's fighting for the streets of London. The one for the smell of alfalfa and the song of bobolink, the other for the fragrance of heather and the music of the nightingale. London or New York, Manchester or Minneapolis, Liverpool or Los Angeles, Birmingham or Boston, it's all one story. For Tommy Atkins and Johnny American are writing this story together.
This is Harry Von Zell winding up this special edition of Command Performance presented in honor of British Army Week.
And now, get ready to smile again with radio's home folks, Vic and Sade. Vic and Sade, written by Paul Reimer, is brought to you each weekday by Procter & Gamble, the makers of the new Sure Mix Crisco. You know, I guess it's just human nature to like to do the things you can do well and sort of steer clear of the things you're not very good at. Like making pies, for instance. Some of you don't like to make pies because, well, you can't count on the pie crust being tender and flaky. Well, listen, you needn't put pies on your can't-do list any longer. No, ma'am, because the Crisco people have developed an amazing new pastry method that's guaranteed to give you tender, flaky pie crust every time. Why not in a generation has there been such a revolutionary improvement in the art of making pies? Just imagine being able to turn out that melt-in-your-mouth kind of pie crust every time. But you see, there's a secret for tender, flaky pie crust right in Crisco that you won't find in another shortening you can buy. Why, with Crisco and this wonderful new Crisco method, you'll be making pies every day just to show how good you are. Why not start out with an apple pie today? A spicy apple pie with a crust so flaky, so tender and digestible, it melts in your mouth. Now, you can make pie crust like that if you'll follow the directions on the Crisco label. Yes, we've printed Crisco's new guaranteed pastry method right on the label of the Crisco can. Look for the red arrow. Now, remember, if you use Crisco and follow Crisco's new method exactly, we guarantee you tender, flaky pie crust every time. If you aren't satisfied, write us on the back of a Crisco label telling in what way the pie crust was unsatisfactory. Tell us what you paid for your Crisco, and we'll refund the price of 1 pound. Address Crisco, Box 837, Cincinnati, Ohio. So get Crisco today, won't you? There's a secret for tender, flaky pie crust right in Crisco, and Crisco's guaranteed pastry method right on the label of the Crisco can. Well, sir, it's early evening as our scene opens now, And here on the front porch of the small house halfway up in the next block, we find Mr. Victor Gook all by himself. Mr. Gook is swinging gently in the swing, casually examining the newspaper for stray bits of intelligence he may have missed during the initial reading before supper. And at this moment, Sade appears around the corner of the house. Listen.
Hey, this grass seed isn't taking a hold in some places.
Oh, there, Sadie. Disturb not my dream.
Hi.
Why are you wandering around the yard in that vagabond fashion?
Oh, just seeing how stuff is growing.
Come up and sit down by my side.
I thought Rush was here with you.
Rush come out the door like a tornado and beat it up the street.
Oh, he must have beat it up to Bluetooth Johnson's house. Nicer Scott and Vernon Pickles are both there. Never stopped to tell you about the big excitement, huh?
Yeah, he would.
He will when he gets back.
What's the big excitement?
The boys are going to accumulate scrap.
Scrap?
Old iron, tin, brass, lead, steel, and like that. Paper, rags, rubber, wire, and so forth.
Oh, for the war?
Yes, and it's a real good thing. Everybody's got trash cluttering up their house the government can use, and Rush and the boys plan
on... Excuse me, I believe I discern Rush approaching.
Yeah.
His step is elastic.
No, he's excited about this. He's the chairman of the board. Him and Nicer and Bluetooth and Vernon have organized a big, elaborate organization with a fancy, highfalutin name.
What is it?
The Virginia Avenue Area Sons of Patriotism Salvage Indemnity.
Hey.
It is a real good thing. Rush was telling me...
Either Rooster Davis or Smelly Clark or Leland Richards or Milton Welch or Willis Roybeck telephone mine?
Nobody telephoned.
Good.
Sade?
Yeah?
Did either Y.Y. Flirch or Homer U. McDancy or Steve Chestbutter or Charlie Razorscum or Harry Fapp or Gus Fuss or Fred Stembottom or Richigan Fishigan or Alf Mushington or Y.I.I. Weisskeeper or H.K. Fieber...
Making fun of me, Olga.
Yes.
Want to tell you about the new project?
She started, Jeff.
Me and Bluetooth and Vernon and Nicer are going to get into it up to our ears.
How's it happen you're trafficking with Nicer? I was under the impression you and Nicer were sworn enemies.
We are, but we've called a truce for the duration.
Oh.
See, this scrap salvage business was maybe 14 or 15% his idea. Out of fairness, we had to include him in the organization. However, I am keeping a little black book.
How you mean, Willie?
Nicer and myself have declared a truce for the duration, but people's natures don't change, and Nicer Scott is just as miserable a scoundrel as he ever was. I'm keeping a little black book where I make a mark every time he requires a paste upside the snoot. Why, doggone it, I just got through spending 20 minutes with Nicer. And you know how many marks I was forced to put down my little black book?
How many?
9.
He's got 9 paste upside the snoot coming?
Yes, the minute the war's over. Why, my gosh.
All right. Tell Gov about the Virginia Avenue area, whatchamacallit.
The Virginia Avenue area Sons of Patriotism Salvage Indemnity.
Indemnity?
Uh-huh.
I don't think the term is used in that sense.
Suits us, guys. Got kind of a fancy swing to it. The Virginia Avenue area, Sons of Patriotism Salvage Indemnity.
You collect old metal, huh, for national defense?
Yeah. And you'd be astonished at what the government is anxious to get a hold of. Doorknobs, hinges, keys, locks, knives, scissors, ashtrays, roller skates, stove pokers, screwdrivers, faucets, sinks, pliers, hose, pickaxes. Well, I could run along half an hour.
You collect all that from the people in the neighborhood here and send it to the government?
No, you don't send it to the government. The government's got no way to handle it. We collect the scrap and sell it to the junk man.
Well, what's he do with it?
Sells it to manufacturers.
Oh.
You can either dispose of your scrap through a junk man, or you can donate it to a collection bureau downtown. Us guys prefer to deal with the junk man.
Isn't that kind of mixing up financial gain with your patriotism?
Well, I don't know as it is, Gov. Realizing a profit is something of an incentive. Of course, patriotism is a great big incentive in itself, but making some money on top of that just adds to the incentive.
Yes, that's true.
I'm greatly pleased with the setup.
Uh-huh.
Seems to me, Annabelle, that people would prefer to sell their own scrap if there's a profit in it.
Well, yes, lots of people will. Those that have a lot of stuff laying around. But the government advises you not to call your junk dealer till you got 100 pounds accumulated. I doubt if very many ladies in this neighborhood got that much, eh, Mom?
No, probably not.
Most everybody's got some little knick-knack cluttering up their attic or cellar. Trash they hesitate to throw away, and yet trash they wish they didn't have to give house room to. That kind of scrap they'll hand over quick as a wink, glad to get rid of it. And feeling good because they know they're taking part in something.
Uh-huh.
And the darndest rubbish the government wants to get a hold of. Rubber heels, overshoes, tennis slippers, hot water bottles, bathing caps. Guys, the list is a mile long. An individual don't want to burn or destroy a single article.
Government want paper?
Sure. Do you know how much scrap paper is required to make containers for shells?
No.
100 pounds. Do you know how much scrap paper was used to pack the cans of canned tomatoes the Army bought last year?
100 pounds.
20,000 pounds of scrap paper was required.
Where'd you get all your information, Rush?
Mr. Chinbunny gave quite a speech in assembly this morning.
Huh.
Well, I can whip out facts and figures by the bushel.
Reason I inquired about paper, Vic.
Uh-huh.
They're monstrous great big piles of magazines you got down cellar.
Those monstrous big piles of magazines should remain down cellar.
But they take up so much space I could use. Makes me mad every time I look at them. In the fruit room, there's that horrible, enormous stack of kitchenware dealers' quarterlies, and in the furnace room, there's that awful, tremendous pile of Lodge magazines. Is there any sense in cherishing them and letting them keep up high every year?
No, I guess not. I can part with them without a qualm at a time like this.
Hey, there's that fine, nicer Scott. Ain't he the dandy, half-witted, lame brain strutting around eating a hunk of bread with jelly on it?
Just the sight of him makes you mad, huh?
Just the sight of him makes me feel like putting down another mark in my little black book.
Paste upside the snoot, eh?
Paste upside the snoot.
How did he earn all those paste upside the snoot that you recorded in your little black book this evening?
Various outrageous statements he made.
Hmm.
He was telling me how intense his family is when they get into something.
Huh?
My Uncle Ralph, he said, fell in love with an Ohio lady. He told this Ohio lady he was so insane about her, he'd go so far as to disown his grandfather. And he done it. At a ceremony held in Hoffman City, Oklahoma, he publicly disowned his grandfather, who died of grief 20 minutes later.
Hey, hey.
Nicer Scott earned himself a mark in my little black book for that excellent story.
Mm.
He earned himself another peachy mark by describing how patriotic his Uncle Harry is.
How patriotic is his Uncle Harry?
Here's how patriotic his Uncle Harry is.
Ha-ha.
That nitwit ox.
How patriotic is Nicer's Uncle Harry?
Well, sir, according to Nicer, his Uncle Harry owns the Central Indiana and Midwest Railroad.
Never heard of it.
No, and neither did anybody else.
How patriotic is Nicer's Uncle Harry?
He's so patriotic, he tore up his railroad. Went out on the tracks in person with a pick and shovel, removed all the rails, and gave them to the government. Also, he gave the government all his locomotives and tools. All in all, he gave the government 10,000 miles of track, 46 locomotives, and 19 switch engines.
That's pretty patriotic.
Isn't it, though? Of course, there was one bad feature, according to Nicer.
What was that?
The Central Indiana and Midwest Railroad ran into Indianapolis before Uncle Harry tore it up. Now Indianapolis is cut off from outside civilization. People can't take a train in or take a train out. Indianapolis is doomed, says Nicer. Indianapolis has no railroad facilities. Indianapolis will dwindle from a great thriving city to a little village at the side of the road.
All because of Uncle Harry's patriotism.
Yes. I give Nicer 2 marks in my little black book for that fine true story.
Hmm.
Look at him over there, choking down bread with jelly on it.
Hmm.
When you boys gonna start accumulating your scrap, Willie?
Right away. Government wants it quick. They need it. Need it bad. That's gonna be part of the work of the Virginia Avenue area Sons of Patriotism Salvage Indemnity. To get people to realize this is urgent. Convince them they shouldn't throw anything away.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go over this neighborhood with a fine-tooth comb. We'll get old alarm clocks, bicycle tires, rakes, shovels, pots, pans, springs, bowls, stovepipes, chains, everything.
Uh-huh.
And we know the ladies will be glad to come across.
I think they will.
Well, go on it. You think about it a second, and you understand they'll be overjoyed to come across.
Mm.
We don't care particularly if they give us their scrap or not. They can take it downtown to the collection bureau, or they can call for their own junk man. Just so they dig it up out of their cellars and attics and start it moving.
Yes.
I was talking with a fella down at the office the other day that was telling me...
Mosquito. Stuck me with his needle good.
I was talking with a fella down at the office the other day...
Now look at Nicer Scott.
What's he doing?
Tying his shoe.
You're not going to give him a mark in your book just for that.
Sure I am.
Going to pace him upside the snoot for just tying his shoe?
Sure.
It's a strange world.
Well, tell me the name of your organization again, Willie. I want to have it straight to tell people.
The Virginia Avenue Area Sons of Patriotism Salvage Indemnity.
The Virginia Avenue Area Sons of Patriotism Salvage Indemnity.
That's right.
It's nice.
which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block. Say, tell me, does your family kind of go for fried chicken? Sizzling, crisp, golden brown Crisco fried chicken? Oh, I'll bet they do. Fried chicken is tantalizing to anybody's appetite. And you know, Crisco has a new way for you to fix it, too. Yep, listen. Try adding quite a lot of poultry seasoning to the flour you roll your chicken in. Boy, what flavor. And that Crisco fried chicken is so digestible, too. You see, Crisco is a digestible shortening. Sure it is. Why, in answer to a question sent doctors by a leading medical publication, 2 out of every 3 doctors who replied specifically called attention to Crisco's digestibility. So try Crisco. This pure all-vegetable shortening costs you less than 2 cents a day for all your frying. And remember, Crisco is a snowy white shortening that stays fresh and sweet-smelling down to the very last spoonful. It has no strong taste, no unpleasant shortening odor to spoil the good natural flavor of food you fry. Is that true of the shortening you're using now? Think it over. And don't forget to listen to Crisco's Vic and Say the next time. This is Ed Roberts speaking. This program came from Chicago. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
These are 3 of the new shows on the new schedule of the Radio Theater Channel. You can hear it by going to Streama at streema.com and search for the All-Time Oldies Radio Theater Channel. Go to tunein.com, then click search, and then enter Radio Theater Channel and click on the icon. Thank you for joining us for this week, and join us next time for more great old-time radio. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.